On this episode of the Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast, Ghost Joe and Creepy Ken talk about some mass sightings of UFOs and other crazy UFO sightings from around the world. Plus, Edgegrave Dave gives us his awesome horrible review on the Monroeville Mall. You probably have seen it before. Check it out. Coming up right now.
Do aliens exist and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I am Ghost Joe.
And I'm Creepy Ken.
And today, we're going to be talking about a few UFO situations, I guess you could say, that have occurred, and we'll probably snowball and some other stuff too. Who the hell knows? So, yeah, I guess we could get this thing started. So, you want me to go first?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So the one you already know which one I'm gonna pick because I already told you it was in the same place. It's in Arizona, and it's called the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, it's Phoenix Lights. It's cool, man.
It's probably the most famous of all of these UFO sightings, because it was a mass UFO sighting where a lot of effing people had seen this. I'm trying to keep this on PG-13 because you messed us up with the last episode. You have that word, so yeah, we might.
I'm gonna edit that out, or we're gonna edit that out, man. Because I got a little angry about scientists there. Scientists pissed me off.
So if you're a scientist, just know that this dude, you know, used to fight for a living. So, you know,
that's right. And if you, scientists and Zach Bagans, the two things that really get my goat, man.
We got problems.
Yeah.
Anyway. No, Zach Bagans, definitely. Listen, and you know what's funny? My very first episode that I did in podcasting, I called it out. And I'm going to call him out again in the fifth season. Zach Bagans, if you're listening, I don't know. I can't fight you. Ken can fight you.
I'll fight you, man.
There you go.
He only fights ghosts, so I'm not even worried.
Yeah, that dude, yeah, I still...
He's a turd.
But I actually heard that he actually went back and... Because I never actually watched a full show because he just pisses me off that much. But I had heard that years later, he had went back in one of the shows and apologized for all of the threats, the ghostly threats that he had made in the past. He was trying to right his wrongs, you know, I guess.
That dude just, he makes me, I get about 2 minutes of him and I want to throw up in my mouth and, you know, swallow it and then throw up again. It's just, God, I hate his stupid voice. I hate everything about him. I hate his bedazzled jeans. I hate his stupid hair. I hate him, man. I hate that guy.
So how is he so popular? Because everybody, you know what? If you're in the actual paranormal field, you seem to have the same kind of, you know, the same kind of thought that we do, it seems. Because Sin was the same way. She's like, yeah, I don't like that dude either.
Yeah, nobody likes him. I don't understand. He's popular,
you know? You know, whatever.
It's got to be these, ladies that, you know.
It's the flip up hair, you know, the...
He's L.A. He's L.A. L.A. nice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. True. You still got to watch Grave Encounters. You'll get a kick.
It's on my list, man. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Let me know when you do it. I love that. So anyway, so the Phoenix Lights, right? It happened on March 13th, 1997. So that was a good year, 97. That was great music around that.
For sure.
So the location, timing and stuff. Phoenix, Arizona, obviously, the Phoenix Lights, and the surrounding areas. And it occurred, these lights had occurred from 7:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. And, I mean, this is insane that these lights were witnessed by over 10,000 people, including civilians, police officers, pilots, and even the governor at the time.
More video and picture of that incident than any other UFO encounter on the on the face of the earth, which is crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, in retrospect, 97, I mean, I know we're old now, but it wasn't that long ago.
No.
It wasn't that long ago, 97. It's not like this happened in the 50s or the 60s. Like, this happened in 1997.
You mentioned the governor saw it too.
Yeah.
But then he went on stage and acted like an idiot. Remember that?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, so they had a conference about it where all the people in the town came, and he's like, everybody calm down, I found the culprit, you know? And then he marches some dude out in a big alien costume. And thought it was funny. Yeah, what a jerk, man. And later he apologized about it because he pissed a bunch of people off. Like,
sure.
What an idiot.
No, sure. Because it's like what we say, like, look, all these people can't be wrong.
No.
If the mass of people, I really don't believe that there's such a thing as like, you know, mass visions, or, you know, like we were talking about in the last episode, the Mandela effect, these mass, you know, remembering things. Like, no, come on, cut it out. You know, like that's not the case. But anyway, with the Phoenix Lights, you know, some of the eyewitness descriptions reported seeing a massive V-shaped craft with 5 to 7 lights, estimated to be as large as several football fields. So more than 200, 300 yards, something like that. And it moved silently across the sky, blocking out stars. So, you know, it was definitely a physical object.
Yeah.
You know, some described amber-colored orbs hovering or gliding in formation around it. And there was no visible propulsions or propellers, you know, wings or sound or anything with this craft.
You know, one of the most notable eyewitnesses to that event was Kurt Russell. He was flying a plane at the time.
Really?
And he saw it. Yep. Yep. He's on the record saying it. He talks about it several times.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is cool.
You know, and actually when these people had, when they were seeing this craft, a lot of them reported feelings of awe and fear, confusion. I mean, that I don't think that came from the craft. I think that's just people's natural reactions. I mean, I'd be confused as hell seeing that thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. You know, like, in fear, obviously, you're going to be like, what the?
Yeah, what is that? Ruin the episode, yeah. Joe.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that it yeah, that, I agree with you. That's got to be a natural emotion when you see something like that. I mean, even if you've seen that stuff before, it's still got to get your heart going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, some people even experience nightmares, and they had like obsessive thoughts afterward about the incident. And many described the event as life-changing or spiritually significant in their lives as well. So it was a big deal. It wasn't just like, oh, I saw this UFO, you know, yesterday or whatever type thing. And, you know, that was that. Like, this thing lingered with people in kind of like an unnatural way. You know, it was more than just a remembering of it.
Yeah.
You know, and like it was attached to their memory in a way. You know,
it was a cool event, man. It's crazy. I remember when that went down, man. I was glued to the television watching the news reports and everything like that, because, you know, I'm a super nerd when it comes to stuff like that. So my grandmother was as well. So, you know, she we always watch stuff like that. And my grandmother's a huge horror nut too.
Nice.
So yeah, she was glued to the television with me.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't even remember it being out. Like, for me, 97 was one of my years that I was playing a lot of gigs with my band. So I was kind of focused on music, you know, that year. That, like, that year up until like 99, 2000, like, it was all about music for me, and playing guitar and playing out in clubs and stuff like that. So I probably missed that, unfortunately, because I would have loved to have seen that real time also.
Yeah.
And had been super exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. And, you know, it's still one of the most talked about events in UFO history. You know, it's very talked about because, I mean, there was, like you said, 10,000 sightings, 10,000 people saw this thing. You know, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, the killjoys have to come around and say that the U.S. Air Force claimed that the lights were military flares dropped during training, or, you know, many witnesses had rejected it, saying, you know, that that's impossible. Like, no, this thing was gigantic. It's not military flares. And just the way that the craft moved, it was unnatural. It wasn't, you know, not to keep harping government, but they really think that we're stupid. Or, you know, like that it's just like, oh, yeah, well, it was a weather balloon. It was space junk.
Swamp gas. Swamp gas causes everything.
Cut it out. You know, like, it's a shame because some people are just like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, but people just do that because they'd rather feel the comfort of just being like, no. Okay, well, they said it was nothing, so it must be nothing.
That's a good point.
You know, kind of like live in the dark kind of with it because they're afraid of it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
People are afraid of what they don't know, you know? So that's kind of, I believe that's how it kind of happened. But yeah, and actually, and like you were saying, that the governor, Simington?
Yep.
He initially mocked it, like you had said, and he later admitted that he saw it and believed it was otherworldly. So he rejected it, obviously, yeah.
I don't think he got reelected after that. That's when he came back out and said that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. You don't mock people, you know, especially, come on, 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Really?
10,000 people, 10,000 of your citizens and your, you know.
And like I said, police officers, pilots. Come on, man. You know, Kurt Russell. Movie star.
Kurt Russell. Yeah.
He's America's sweetheart. How can you go against Kurt Russell?
Yeah, he is. I do love Kurt Russell, though.
So
there he is.
But it became a national news story. It was covered by all of the major media outlets, CNN, ABC, all the newspapers. It inspired documentaries, books, festivals, all sorts of stuff. And it sparked ongoing debates between skeptics, believers. You know, this was a big, big deal.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and just to compare it a little bit with some other stuff. So, as I said, the Phoenix Lights were in 1997 in Arizona, you know, 10,000 witnesses. You know, there was also Hudson Valley in New York. Actually, I live in Hudson Valley, too.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. And, you know, Hudson Valley, New York. And there was a craft, a V-shaped craft, very similar to Phoenix Lights. And over 5,000 people saw that. Come on, man.
That's crazy.
I mean, really? You know, it can't be nothing, you know, let's just say that, you know, if it's military and they're trying to be very secretive, they're not being very secretive if 10,000 people are seeing it.
Yeah.
You kind of should come out. If that was like a real military thing, you'd be like, yeah, all right. You know, like 10,000 people saw that stuff. So yeah, it's us.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not going to trick people into believing, oh yeah, no, that was nothing. You didn't see that.
Right.
You didn't actually do that.
I'll tell you, though, for the second year we lived here, down here in our neighborhood, there was a big UFO sighting in our neighborhood with a V-shaped craft and 8 lights. We weren't home at the time, of course. So, you know, I didn't get to see it, but I got to see pictures on Facebook and they were pretty incredible. It was really close too. It was really close. I think I can probably find those pictures and send them to you.
Huh.
Pretty neat, man. But I missed the whole damn thing, of course, because, you know, I don't get to see stuff like that. The cool stuff just isn't in the cards for me.
I hear you. Yeah, I know. Well, me neither. You know, a few years ago, I think not even long ago, maybe 2 years ago, there was supposedly in New York City, there was a big UFO sighting that had people outside their cars in like the middle of, I think it was the Bronx Queens Expressway, which is like huge expressway, or Bell Parkway, one of them, in New York City. One of the busiest parkways, highways in New York City. And people all got out of their cars because they saw this big thing in the sky. And I don't know, apparently it turned out to be the Goodyear blimp. But I don't know how I mean, that's what they're saying, but how could you mistake that? Like, we've seen the blimp before, so how could so many people get out of their cars and not notice it's the blimp?
Yeah, that's crazy.
you know? So I don't know whether to believe that either, you know?
Ozzy would say that's poppycock.
Listen, man, it's still a touchy subject. All right. I know it was a few weeks ago. And I actually had some things going for last week too, with, you know, cause I had a few things planned with, a few things about Ozzy. Like, did you know that Geezer Butler from, not to veer off too much, cause we're talking about UFOs and stuff, but it is paranormal related, of course. So did you know that Geezer Butler, the bass player from Black Sabbath that was with Ozzy in the beginning, he had actually had a dream. Or not even a dream. He said that he had woken up in the middle of the night and he saw this dark figure in a cloak standing at the foot of his bed. And it was just standing there looking at him. It didn't say anything, but it just stood there and looked at him and it scared the hell out of him. And then the next day he told Ozzy, and because of that story that he told Ozzy, Ozzy came up with the first line of the song Black Sabbath. What is this that stands before me? You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I thought that was a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it is.
You know? Yeah, and then, you know, Geezer had actually also said that when he was a kid, he used to see orbs as a kid showing him glimpses of the future. And actually, he even had similar experiences to you, Ken, that you had said, where he said that he would have premonition dreams. And then the next day, whatever he dreamt about would come true.
Yeah, it happens all the time, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had those happen too. He talks about it, I think, in his autobiography that he had made.
Pretty cool.
Another thing. Yeah. Another thing too, before we get back into the UFO thing, is with after, if anybody knows the history with Ozzy and stuff, when Ozzy went solo and had an Ozzy Osbourne band, His first guitar player, Randy Rhoads, had passed away tragically in a plane accident while they were on tour. So instead of them canceling the tour, they got a new guitar player to fill in. And it was this guy named Bernie Torme, who's an Irish guitar player, very good guitar player. And they had him step in. And the thing is, since it was so like such a quick thing that this guy had to step in and like learn all the songs real quick, and he didn't even know everything just yet, he came in there so fast that he had to use all of Randy Rhoads' equipment still. So he was using, I mean, this guy just died like a week earlier.
Wow.
And he's using all the same equipment, the guitars, you know, all the foot pedals and stuff, the guitar stuff. And he had claimed that when he was playing on stage, that the guitar pedals would have a mind of its own and turn on and turn off at like weird spots.
Interesting.
And he had said that he feels that was kind of like Randy messing with the electronics.
That's bizarre. That's pretty cool though.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are my little Ozzy things I wanted to get out of the way, but you know, I hope we didn't stray too much. It's still paranormal, man.
Yeah.
Why? No, let's go on with your, terrible segue, but let's go with your thing now.
Okay. Let's go with my thing now. You probably say that to all the guys.
That's right. Sorry. That's full. You know, that's why I keep having to find new people on Grindr.
So my story, you think yours is so cool, don't you, Joe, with all your 10,000 confirmations and military witnesses and all that stuff. You think that's awesome. Well, I got news for you, buddy. Buckle up, because I'm about to take you and the audience on a journey that's going to completely reframe what you think about UFOs. Okay?
Go for it.
So I'm going to talk about the Itsuro Bune incident from 1803 in Japan. All right? Never heard of that, have you?
I have not.
That's one of my favorite stories, man. It's so good.
Nice.
So by the time I'm done, you're going to realize this case is just crazy. It's just a crazy case. And it actually predicts some of the modern day UFO cases. Well, kind of parallels them, not really predicts them. So this story is like, what, 220 years old? But I mean, it's just a crazy story. So picture this, like February 22nd, 1803 in Japan. And the Japanese people are completely cut off from the world. They're under I'm not going to try to pronounce this word because, you know, I'm really good at pronouncing other languages. But they were under the rule of the Shogun at the time, and they had a complete isolation policy, and they've had that for over 150 years at this point. So virtually no foreigners had been allowed into the country for 150 years. All right, now think about that, because most Japanese people have literally never seen anyone who wasn't Japanese at that time, which was kind of crazy to think about, right? So it's kind of crucial to think about that. So keep that in your mind, because what I'm about to tell you kind of happened in a cultural vacuum, and there was really no contamination from outside influence or any reference point for what these people encountered, all right?
Okay.
So it's early morning, and it's along the coast of the Hitachi province, and local fishermen, they're preparing for their daily catch when they spot something floating in the coastal waters. All right, but it wasn't like driftwood or debris from a shipwreck. According to them, what they saw was a perfectly round craft measuring. They took measurements of this craft now because they saw this thing and they went out. There was kind of a storm going on. They waited for the storm to die down. This thing was still floating on pretty harsh waves. They went out. They brought this thing. They towed this thing back with a couple of little fishing boats. And they said they measured it and they did all this, but it was approximately 17 feet, 8 inches in diameter and 10 feet, 10 inches high. And they said it resembled, you know, when you hear these old stories, they had no reference point, right? So they said it was like a big rice bowl. It looked like a big rice bowl, which is kind of cool, because if you think about a rice bowl with a lid, what does that look like to you? It looks like a UFO, you know?
Yeah.
So the bottom half appeared to be made of some type of polished metal. And some of the witnesses described it as iron, and others said it was bronze. But that was kind of impossible in 1803. The entire structure was completely seamless. So in 1803, having something made of bronze that was completely seamless is pretty crazy. There were no rivets, no joints that they could see. No assembly marks, no visible construction methods, anything like that. It looked like it was formed from a single piece of material. The top part had some red woodish stuff on it. And the upper half, you know, was transparent, completely transparent, crystal clear, like it had the finest glass on it. And it was formed into a perfect dome. And it's pretty crazy because there are artist renditions of this. From actual history books, Japanese history books, which is kind of cool. And you look at it, you go, oh yeah, well, that's a UFO. You know, there's no ifs, ands, and that's there's nothing about it that us in our mind, because we know what it, you know, we know what a UFO is. We go, oh yeah, that's definitely a UFO. But like I was saying, the top was completely transparent, perfectly clear, no distortions or flaws. And there was no such glassmaking technology at that day, especially that the Japanese would have. It just didn't exist at the time. They couldn't have replicated it without, you know, being transparent and perfectly clear. Absolutely couldn't have. So as they're towing this back, they get it back to the shore, they're examining it, and somebody's up on top looking at it, and they see movement inside, right? So they're like, what in the hell? So they decided to try to open this thing, and they get it opened, and inside is, they see a blanket and something that looks like a pillow and a water bottle and a little like box full of food. And then they see a young woman who appears to be between the ages of 18 and 20. And she's unlike anything these people could ever have imagined, right? Her skin was extremely pale, and it was described as being snow white. Wow. Yeah, crazy. Her hair was red and white, not red or white. It was red and white. So it was long flowing together in crazy patterns that they've never seen before. And the tips were like white on this thing. You know, and you, as you can imagine, in Japan, when you've never seen an outsider, everybody in Japan has black hair, you know? So it'd be crazy to see that. So her clothing was bewildering as well. She was wearing garments that were made from materials that they didn't recognize. They had intricate patterns on them and symbols that didn't match anything that they had ever seen before. And the fabrics appeared to be of extremely fine quality. The textures seemed to be woven together like something they'd never seen before, like a style that they'd never seen. Right. Here's where it gets kind of interesting. The woman was clutching this ornate box, all right? And the box was approximately 2 feet in length, and she absolutely would not let anyone near it at all. The moment someone approached the container, she became visibly distressed and started speaking rapidly in a completely unknown language to these people. I don't mean like a foreign language. They said, a lot of witnesses said that her speech was melodious, like she was kind of singing, but it was completely incomprehensible. Like, and it was crazy because some of the village elders that were there knew some linguistics of the near, you know, the closer countries around them, and they had no clue what she was saying. She kept trying to communicate. She tried to communicate through writing, and she would just draw symbols in the sand that were like really geometric and precise, which is crazy. So I got to scroll down. See, scrolling down, man. So, you know, the village elders, they got the village elders involved, word spread, crowds gathered to decide what to do with this woman now. Some of the people argued to keep her, and some thought she might be a divine messenger, and others feared that she could be like dangerous or harboring some sort of supernatural forces. So they didn't want anything to do with that. Some of the village elders thought that she could be a princess from a far off land that was exiled for cheating, because as a matter of fact, just years before this, they had another incident where they had a woman come in from the shore in a regular boat, and she was exactly that. She was cast away on a boat with some food and some water because she had cheated on her husband. And so they thought maybe that was it, and they didn't really know what to do with her at the point. Instead of, you know, taking her hostage or capturing her or exploiting her in any way to find out what she had, they basically put her on the boat and sent her back out into the ocean, which is crazy. So this was pretty heavily documented. They took down, like I said, they took measurements of the boat. They tried to figure things out. The boat, as they call it, Utsurabune stands for hollow ship. That's what the word stands for, hollow ship. So they shipped her back out. Now, there's some really cool things that they did. There were symbols on this boat. And some of the parallels that I'm going to touch on are these symbols, and the symbols that she was writing were written down by the Japanese people and put into books, 3 different books, which are like historically documented books. Those symbols are almost exact matches to the symbols found at, geez, my mind just went blank. You're going to have to edit this sucker, man. I'm telling you. Roswell and Rendlesham Forest.
Wow.
The symbols that they recovered from them that were on pieces, they were almost exactly the same as this. And, you know, this wasn't found out until later when, you know, UFO researchers started really digging into Utsurabune. And yeah, man, I mean, it's a pretty crazy story. You got to look up the picture, man. You got to look up the picture. Anybody out there that's listening, look up the picture of Utsurabune. It's Utsuro-Buna. Look up the pictures, man. There's no denying that's a UFO. That's a spacecraft. But yeah, I mean, it's very heavily documented. Like I said, it's in 3 of their books that they consider historical books, history books. And yeah, it's been a hot topic as of lately. People are really starting to dig into this story because because of the symbols that were recovered basically from Rendlesham. Somebody connected those dots. So unfortunately, it happened 220 years ago. So there really isn't too much to go on. But it's a really cool story.
I mean, you don't know, though. If there's anybody out there that was there, that saw this, definitely give us a call at 845-600-0744. Let us know about it. You know, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com if you saw this thing in person. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I would definitely love to hear from you, too, because we're going to take you straight to the Guinness Book of World Records and, you know, get you documented. No, it's a cool story, incredible. Man. It's a cool story. Yeah,
and it happened so long ago. And like you were saying too, though, you know, when you see the pictures, you're like, oh, that's definitely a UFO. Look, there are hieroglyphics of UFOs and aliens. That's not nothing, you know, like, come on, like those things happened thousands of years ago that, you know, people had drawn these images that they didn't know what the hell they were, and they drew them. You know, that's not nothing. You know, yeah. And obviously we had no flying things then, so what the hell was it? You know, like, it's just, but yeah, no, that's an awesome story. I'd never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's really cool because, you know, there's some things in it that are really cool, like the seamless technology then. I don't even know if we can do seamless stuff now, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty crazy. And the fact that these people put this into their history books or books of history tells you right there it was a significant event that happened, you know, significant enough for them to document it and put it into books. Now, you will find three different stories of this from three different places, and the story's a little different. And I will say that, disclaimer, the first written account of this happened 25 years after the actual incident. So, you know, there's a little bit of room for error there. You know what I mean?
A little time gap.
Yeah, but either way, it's a really cool story, and it's just always fascinated me because, you know, you put yourself in their shoes for, you know, just 2 seconds and think these people hadn't seen another person with not dark hair, you know what I mean? And anybody foreign for how long? And then here comes this lady that floating in the water in this ship unlike anything they've ever seen before. You know, it's pretty crazy.
You had said before when we were talking about it, you were like, oh, you know, your UFO encounter was in a different country. So, you know, when I was going through a few of the places that had mass sightings, a few of them were from different countries. So I didn't want to say them until I found out which country you were going to talk about. So a couple other things that had mass sightings was Westall. It was called the Westall UFO in 1966 in Melbourne, Australia, where 200 plus students and teachers had seen a saucer shaped object hovering near the school. And I believe a few of the kids had said, because I think I saw a special about that on Netflix. They were talking about it, called Encounters. And it was pretty cool. And I believe that these kids were talking about it, and they had said that they had even seen an alien as well. A few of them stated that. There's also one that happened in Belgium. It was called the Belgian UFO wave. And it happened between 1989 and 1990. And, you know, obviously, Belgium, what, Germany, right? Yeah, I'm terrible with geography. but that one was, I don't know. I just know about the waffles. I'm a fat guy, so I just, yeah. But that one was witnessed by thousands of people as well. And that, again, was a triangular-shaped craft. And it was tracked by radar, and it was chased by jets. So, yeah. So all these mass sightings, man, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And it wasn't just like 5 or 10 people. Like, some of these sightings were in the thousands.
You know what I always find fascinating about UFO stuff in different countries. The United States is one of the only countries that don't have some government entity looking into this UFO stuff. Like France has a huge one. They are all about it, man. The US is the only one. We're the only one that's so secretive about it. And so I know that we do. I know that we do have.
We do, but are they really actually looking into it, or are they just kind of placed there just to say, oh, yeah, yeah, no, we're looking into it. Of course. Yeah.
And now we do. But I know we have some secret. We're so secretive, man. We're so secretive over here.
Yeah.
I don't even understand why. I know why. It's because the less we know, the more control they have over us. And that's really the bottom line.
I'd like to think that they're trying to protect mass hysteria. But yeah, no, I think it's probably your thing. I think it's just because they want the control. I don't think they really give a crap about us.
No.
You know, to be honest with you. You know, they would say, like, about all these meteors that are supposed to be. I don't know if you remember, what was it, last year? They were saying about how this meteor was going to be coming dangerously close to Earth in a couple of years, right?
Yep.
And then just out of nowhere, they tested a rocket, like a missile, that could destroy a space rock or something. And they're like, oh yeah, no, that was just a test. Yeah, there was no reason for us to do that. It was just for fun, basically. No, it's because there's really going to be a freaking meteor that's going to come close to us, and you're trying to make sure that you could, you know, get rid of it. Just say what it is. You know, why do you have to say, oh yeah, no, that was just training thing. Yeah, that had nothing to do with the report that a big ass meteor is going to possibly hit Earth in a few years.
Yeah. You know what I would do? I would send a couple of, what's his name? Oh my God, I cannot think of his name right now.
Kurt Russell?
No, not Kurt Russell. The other actor dude that isn't an actor dude anymore because he's got all those health things going on. Oh, what the? Bruce Willis? I'd send Bruce Willis, and I'd send up Liv Tyler, and I'd send them up there, and they could blow the rock up there. And, you know, we could make a movie about it probably in. Aerosmith sing a song.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like you might be onto something there.
We should make that movie, man. That would be a great movie.
Just don't cast that dude, Ben Affleck. He's a terrible actor.
Oh, really? I love Ben Affleck. I'll cast him, man.
His man toy is better than him. Matt Damon, I think, is a better actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Matt Damon is an excellent actor.
I agree with you. You see him? He's looking old, man.
Yeah, I haven't seen them now.
Oh, my gosh. He's got this big, huge beard now. He's looking old.
Man. I know. Everybody's getting old and dying, man. It's crazy. All of us, all the people from our childhood, suck getting old.
Man. Yeah, it does, man. It's hell getting old.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, actually, and that's another thing we should do an episode about, too, is the time travel. I definitely want to do, you know, a thing about time travel for sure, without a doubt.
We're all time travelers, if you think about it. We're always traveling through time, you know? If you're alive, you're time travel.
We're never going backwards, though, you know? We're never...
That's true.
You know, we're time traveling to the future, I guess, you know?
Benjamin Button went backwards, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
That's an actor that's kind of, I'm a little bit weird about. Like, I don't know if he's a good actor or a bad actor.
What's that?
Brad Pitt. You know,
I like Brad Pitt. Well,
I don't know if he's good or bad. I can't tell.
It depends on what he's in. Because Fight Club, man, still one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah, but Edward Norton made that movie.
Oh,
if Ed Norton wasn't in that movie would.
Yeah, you're probably right about. I don't know.
He's a sick bastard.
That movie was good, man.
Between that and American History X, that dude is a sick bastard.
Yeah, that was good. And the Hulk. He was a Hulk. Remember that?
He was the best Hulk.
I think so too. I agree.
He was way better than that Mark Ruffalo guy. Way better.
I hate that guy's face.
He has a punchable face.
He does. I hate his face.
And his voice. Yeah. And now we're talking about nothing. We completely went off the whole paranormal chain.
That's awesome though. We're just rambling on about nothing at all. So good.
But no, I honestly, you mentioned the guy. I feel so super bad about Bruce Willis, man. That dude, talk about amazing actors. That guy was.
Yeah, dude.
And I heard now he doesn't even remember that he was a famous actor.
Anymore. Crazy, man.
Can't even remember that he was a famous actor.
Yeah, I got to watch Die Hard every Christmas because that's my Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie. Without a doubt, is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I watched that and I absolutely love Lucky Number 11. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, dude, you got to see Lucky Number 11. That movie is so freaking good. I love that movie. You got to watch it, man. That's one of my faves. And he isn't in it big time. He's in it a little bit, but yeah, he makes it.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
He's awesome. He's the cool, like tough, quiet guy. You know, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, now that we're completely off track and not talking about paranormal stuff anymore.
Well, we could talk about The Sixth Sense. See that?
Oh, okay.
There you go. See how I tied that in there?
I did.
Genius, man.
I like that. That was a good tie-in. Every time you watch that movie, I'm being told that like you'll find something, you know, because I'm not going to give away the ending just because if you didn't watch it. I mean, if you didn't watch it by now, I don't know what's wrong with you, but, you know, I heard every time you watch it, you're like, oh, man, I didn't notice that the first time I saw it. I didn't notice that, you know?
Yeah.
But no, that's a great movie.
That kid that played in that, what the hell's his name?
Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, that's a kid. He never really grew into his looks. I mean, the kid looks exactly the same, only fatter now. You know, he's like exactly same face, man. I hate it.
I don't think he acts anymore. I think he's done acting.
I just saw him in something.
Did he?
Yeah, just not too. He was in something my wife and I were watching. It was I can't think of what it was. It was a show. But yeah, he isn't good. I don't know.
Because we went completely off on this, off the rails on the crazy train. See.
Oh, tie-ins. We got tie-ins, man.
Because we went completely off the rails here. Macaulay Culkin's looking all right. He got very healthy now. You know, he doesn't look like a
dead bird or a baby bird anymore. He looked like a baby bird, man.
You know what? I was going to use a lot worse comparisons. That's a good one.
I haven't seen him lately, but yeah, he was looking pretty rough there for a while.
Yeah.
But then again, if Michael Jackson diddled you, you'd look like that too, probably.
He's saying that never happened. All right.
Oh, I'll say that.
But he's saying, like, look, he goes, what I gain if I said he did or he didn't? He goes, he didn't do nothing. Like everybody's saying all this and that. He's like, all this other stuff was happening with other people. And everybody turned the blind eye and they just focused on Jackson because he's weird, you know?
I don't know, man, because Corey Feldman said nothing happened either. And that dude is effed. That dude is weird.
He's an amazing guitar player, though. Have you seen his guitar playing?
Yeah, dude. You know what? That's funny because have you seen the Limp Bizkit thing?
No.
So Fred Durst, he's opening for them.
Oh, really?
Tour, yeah. And there was all this talk about him not playing the guitar for real and not doing this. And Fred went out and sat there. It's on video. He sat right next to him. He's like, okay, go ahead and play it. He plays it and he goes, stop. And he stops. And he's like, he's really playing it. He's really playing the guitar. It's really him. But it does suck. Either way, it does not sound good.
No, it's not good at all.
Damn song that he's got, though, that one song, it's such a terrible song. It's such a terrible song.
But did you ever see the video? Look, now that we're talking about, I don't know anymore. But did you see the video of him from like the 80s or the 90s doing like some kind of like weird like rapping, like dancing thing?
Yeah.
That's worse than the guitar playing. I'm glad he's not doing that anymore.
There's that one song that he has, every time I hear it, is the worst song I've ever heard, but it gets stuck in my head for days and I can't get it. It's an earworm. That's what SpongeBob would call that, earworm. It gets stuck in my head, man, and I just want to, I literally want to shoot myself. I'm like, oh.
But you know what? he's our childhood too, though. So yeah, you know, he's kind of weird now, but
best Feldman role. Go. What's your favorite movie he was in?
Oh, Stand By Me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Killer movie, dude.
I mean,
you are my brother, man. See,
I just showed my kids that for the first time like a month or so ago.
That movie's great, dude. Yeah. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Love it. I like watching reaction videos and stuff.
Yeah, me too.
I was just watching yesterday or the day before, people reacting to the end of Stand By Me when they talk about River Phoenix's character.
Yeah.
When they're like, oh yeah, you know, he got in the middle of a
knife fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was such a good movie, man.
Stephen King does his best work when it's not horror. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Stephen King. I love Stephen King. I've read almost every one of his books. I love Stephen King. But when he doesn't do horror, it's really, really good. I mean, Stand By Me, right? Amazing. Green Mile. Amazing. You know, like, so good, dude.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that's my childhood right there, man. Stand By Me, The Goonies. Come on. You know, they don't... I'm going to sound like an old man, but they really don't make movies like that anymore.
No.
At all. Not even close. Not even close.
Nope. I agree.
Even the other 90s, The Sandlot, you know? Come on. You know?
Killing me, Smalls. You're killing me.
Maybe those are young kid movies, like for 12, 13-year-old boys, like what I was when I was watching them. But they're amazing movies. I mean,
listen, if The Sandlot comes on television, my wife will stop everything she's doing. It's over. She's sucked into The Sandlot. She loves that movie. It's her thing. She can recite literally every line of that movie. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. For me, that movie is Forrest Gump.
Oh, me too.
If Forrest Gump just starts, I'm like, well, I guess I'm sitting here for 2.5 hours.
Yep. Great movie, dude. That's one of the best movies ever.
Me and my wife refuse to show our kids that movie because we're like, you're not going to appreciate it. You're not going to appreciate it yet. You got to get older to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't watch it at 12 years old or 9 years old. You're not going to appreciate that movie.
Yeah, I agree.
When you get a little older, then you watch that movie.
So some of that movie was filmed here in Charleston.
Oh,
which is kind of cool. Like the bench scenes and stuff like that were filmed here in Charleston.
That's cool.
It is cool because we go to the park all the time where that movie was, where those parts were filmed at. And it's really cool because you can like sit on the bench that he was on and yeah, it's really cool.
Do they have anything on the bench like showing that it was from the movie or anything or no?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. That we had that. And these are our famous, you know. Lots of movies have been filmed down here. You know, of course, The Patriot, because that movie takes place down here, right in the county, right like 2 miles from where I live is where it took place. The school down here is called the Swamp Foxes. So, and that's what his people were called, the Swamp Foxes, which is kind of cool. And then, of course, The Notebook was filmed right here, too, which... I don't care. You can call me what you want to call me, but The Notebook was a really freaking good movie. That movie was great.
I just saw it for the first time last year. I had never seen it before because I'm like, that's a crappy girl movie. I'm still a little kid. I'm like, nah, that's a girl movie. I don't want girl movie.
It is.
But I watched it and I was crying like a baby.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Cause that movie was incredible. It was really, really good. But the whole thing was filmed here, which is cool.
I almost wanted to go hang out with, who is that, Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, Ryan Gosling, man. Oh, man, he's so hot.
Wolfie. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. By the way, since I think you started this tangent, so you're editing this episode.
Okay.
I might have messed up by having us restart it, but no, you're editing this. You know what, though? Before we go on and say some other crazy stuff like we've been doing this entire episode, let's check in with Edgegrave Dave with his horrible review about his experience at the Monroeville Mall. Let's go, Edgegrave.
What is going on, my son Blaze Cryptic Crazies? Edgegrave Dave is here. And, you know, there's a term that sometimes gets thrown around, and it's a term that I take very close to my heart, all the way down to the grave, and that term is bucket list. And this blood-soaked bucket was first filled with a special request to myself way back in my Creep 16 days when Ghost Joe, the Nat Man, and I would rent the hell out of the video store, discovering and exploring horror as a whole. And little did I realize that almost 30 years later, I would be able to check off this list, stabbing westward with my fountain pen, fulfilling this request when I'm holding in my hand a magnet. And that magnet states, Monroeville Mall. This was an important place in their lives. And what I'm talking about is the actual mall from the 1978 George A. Romero film, Dawn of the Dead. Upon leaving my main mausoleum and making the trek all the way down to Cripsburg, Pennsylvania, which is over 6 hours from where we are buried, I went to go see our extended Edgegrave family, and we hadn't seen them in a while, and they sent me a pretty innocent text. They said, hey, you might want to open this up and check out this place on your way home. I go ahead, I click on the link, and I see Living Dead Museum. That sounds pretty cool. What I didn't know is that the Living Dead Museum, which was established in 2008, is encompassed by the foundation that celebrates, tells a whole historical zombie timeline, and is encompassed in the very mall that was shot for the Dawn of the Dead. It was then that the memories of almost 30 years ago came flooding back, and I get to go to a place I've wanted to go to since I was a kid. My friends, this is going to be a very different kind of review. This is going to be a part one. I am issuing an Edgegrave warning, as this might spoil multiple topics of pop culture and several movies. So take heed, you have been warned. So when I first started conceiving the ideas for this review, all the crazy thoughts that were running through my head, and retrospectively thinking about my experience there, at first, I was only going to talk about the Living Dead Museum, touch upon the mall, touch upon the movie, and call it a day. Well, that all changed. Today, when I just learned the property has been sold to none other than Walmart. As you can imagine, there's just so much that I want to say to you guys right now, but I think that the easiest way that I could do it is, for those of you who do not know, Dawn of the Dead is the second film in the Of the Dead franchise by George A. Romero. It is a sequel to 1968's Night of the Living Dead. Upon coming to the mall, the first thing that I saw coming into the entrance was a truly excellent poster that had a little bit of history of the mall. They have a couple of photographs with facts on it. There's an ice rink in the mall that was both used in that movie and also in the movie Flashdance. That was pretty cool. But let's start with the parking lot. The second I got to the parking lot, I said, oh yeah, this has the same streetlight parking lot posts with numbers on them from the movie. And I took my camera and I reenacted when they had that wide angle shot and you could see where the helicopter was flying around and you had hordes of zombies just walking around. So, silly me, the first thing that I did, I told my family, guys, you got to get a shot of me banging on the opening glass doors like I'm a zombie trying to get in. And my daughter runs in, and I was trying to come after her. And, well, people that saw me, I assured them I was not trying to come after them, too. But they did help me take pictures. Sadly, the ice skating rink is no longer there, as it was replaced in 1984 by the food court, which I'm very happy to say everything was open in the food court, save for just one restaurant.
And a lot of that can be said with a lot of malls around the country nowadays. There's been a lot of store closures. Also, the mall where they did shoot Back to the Future in the parking lot, the Twin Pines Mall, I did recently take a look at a YouTube video, and unfortunately, there's only a handful of stores left, but the Twin Pines Mall sign is still there. So I want to go back in time to the fun times, where there's millions of things to buy in the mall, and you can totally survive a zombie apocalypse with. So let's take a look at some of these changes between the movie and now. And as a public service announcement, since all of you guys know by now that I'm a huge Back to the Future nut, the Twin Pines Mall is actually called the Puente Hills Mall, and it's located in City of Industry, California. So there you go. If you want to take your Mall Madness movie tour, those are two places that you can go. Now it's time to get Back to the Dead. Opening in 1969, the Monroeville Mall had over 150 stores at one point, making it the eighth largest mall in all of Pennsylvania, not to mention outlining areas that had an A&P, where the zombies would sway in front of it. Hey, remember that supermarket, guys? How many of these 150 stores would now have to be counted if you subtract how many are closed? Along with these closures, there used to be beautiful water fountains. Guys, that's something I seriously miss about going to the mall. Just relaxing by the water fountain, throwing your penny, and avoiding zombies that would fall from the top floor, making a big splash. A lot of these have now been replaced with kiosks on a tile floor with mats on them. Not to mention, this mall used to have live plants, other areas of water that would run through it, and a bridge. I mean, it was a really nice place. The arcade, though, is still there. Though it's a little small, there was an awesome Kiss pinball machine, and the fam and I did get to play laser tag. And I lost every single round, but I can guarantee you that if zombies were breaking through that thing, I would be a winner for sure. There used to be an actual ammunition store that had weapons, guns, and all things like that. It's amazing that malls used to just be able to sell things like this. I don't know what kind of clearance or certifications that you would have needed. The mall also used to have a pub, the ice skating rink we already talked about. Man, I wish I could have seen that. And JCPenney and Macy's is still there. A lot of that was used in the movie. Of course, we're talking about something that is from the 70s, so there has to be changes. I'm very happy to say that a lot of the floors, the parking lot, and the overall layout is still the same. It's very comforting to see that. Let's also talk about the escalators. Though the escalators have been modernized and replaced, I did make sure that I went up and down where they went in the movies, and I did get to play zombie. Another thing that I want to talk about is that it had a great deal of clientele. There were definitely people that were walking around in the mall. I mean, it wasn't like a total mob scene, but the mall did look active enough. It seems like it's a place where people go. I did look for the helicopter landing pad, and I honestly didn't see it. I mean, I wasn't going to start climbing any kind of roofs or anything like that. You know, in film, this mall, aside from the Dawn of the Dead and Flashdance, there were some scenes from Zach and Mary Make a Porno that was directed by Kevin Smith. And Kevin Smith does have that hockey jersey, the Monroeville Zombies. This was also in the 1984 children's fantasy film, The Boy Who Loved Trolls. I just recently read that Mr. Rogers, there was a contest and they filmed it by the fountain in the Monroeville Mall, and they had it. There happens to be on Netflix, Mindhunter, one of the entrances to the Monroeville Mall was used. And I'm a wrestling fan, as some of you might have guessed with my old Bray Wyatt review. In 2021, there was a pay-per-view called Backlash, and Corey Graves calling that match, well, he said that he had flashbacks of the Monroeville Mall, which was paying homage to his old hometown and the Dawn of the Dead. Christine, which we recently talked about here, does take place in the suburb of Libertyville. That's fictional, but that was adjacent, apparently, to the Monroeville Mall, and they had mentioned that. And finally, one of the coolest things that you can do is check out the Living Dead Museum. This I will cover in part two of this review. Did you know that not only is there this awesome museum that has artifacts, all kinds of history, there is a Return of the Living Dead weekend coming in October. Man, I wish I lived just a little bit closer. It's even going to have actors from some of these movies, including Tom Matthews, who was in Return of the Living Dead, and of course, played one of my favorite iterations of Tommy Jarvis in Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. There have been conventions at the mall. There have been zombie walks. As a matter of fact, there have been mall tours, and they show some of this on the bonus features of my Blu-ray copy of Dawn of the Dead. But speaking of zombie walks, my goal, if I can, is to help people walk this mall for a long time as they are trying to turn this into a historical landmark. Can they do it? Let's just look at this for a quick second. In closing, I had come across a post by both Bloody Disgusting about saving the Monroeville Mall and Ken Fourier. Ken Fourier famously starred as Peter Washington in The Dawn of the Dead, and he was very passionate about what he said. He said, "This place means a great deal to millions. It is now going to be replaced by a major retailer. The question is, does the Monroeville Mall have the necessary requirements to become a historical landmark?" And truthfully, guys, I don't know what those requirements are. All that I can say, just like I have, is that there is a link where you can sign a petition. You can Google both Bloody Disgusting and Monroeville Mall and definitely make sure that you put historical landmark. And maybe, you know, together as us horror fans, we can make change. But I would definitely say go ahead and show some love to your local mall, because the real horror is you never know what's going to die and disappear. You know, certainly not looking to depress anyone, but if you just maybe buy a nice ice cold drink, walk its floors, you know, you can help to contribute to needing a mall when I know that the malls do need us. So special thanks to my extended Edgegray family in Andrew, Jess, and little zombie Maddie. Thank you so much for the opportunity, guys. Now back to you, Ghost Joe.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Edgegrave, for that great review. Listen, and that's what I love about Edgegrave's reviews, that it's not just always about movies, right? It's about where these movies were made and this history that this mall has. So definitely go and sign that petition, because that mall should not be going anywhere, okay? And, you know, just like any other retailer, right? Let's keep these places open. Because, you know, it's sad when some of these places close. I'm still a little bit upset about Toys R Us closing as well. So, yeah, man. So, on with the show. Can't wait to hear the next one, Edgegrave. We'll talk to you soon. Anyway, yeah, I guess we'll call it a day now anyway. And just, you know, if you have any paranormal experiences that you want to share, if you've ever seen a UFO or aliens, or if you've ever been abducted, you know, if you're still on the ship, you know, give us a call. See if there's any cell phone reception, hopefully. I mean,
hell, if you're a guy and you watch The Notebook, let us know.
Anyway, 845-600-0744. And yeah, let us know about it. Leave a voicemail, or, you know, let us know if you want to come on the show or whatever. Or you could email me, ghostjoeny@gmail.com, all that. And, you know, you could do so anonymously if you want. Check us out on all of our social stuff. Now I got Ken going with his TikToks and stuff, and we're cranking out these TikToks and these videos. Very, very interesting, cool stuff. I have a new segment called On Haunted eBay every Wednesday. I'm putting out a Haunted eBay segment, so check that out on YouTube and TikTok and everything. And I think I'm gonna start doing a couple lives here and there, you know, a few minutes here, a few minutes there, because we finally figured out how to do it. And, you know, just to see if we could talk to you guys in person, and, you know, definitely say hello and check out everything, subscribe to our YouTube and all that stuff. And Oh, and actually, I haven't said this yet either, that we still have shirts that are for sale on our Bonfire store. I'll try and link that somewhere. I'm still getting used to the new hosting platform that we have with this, where to put, like, you know, all these links and stuff, where so you could buy a Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast shirt, and the proceeds go to charity. Not a dime goes to us. It goes to, you know, different charities. It says on the website which charity it goes to. They're all reputable charities. I picked them myself. And yeah, so definitely do that for a good cause. And that's going to do it for us, everybody.
I do want to say one thing. On the TikTok things, when you guys check them out, I'm really trying to find stuff that people may not have heard of and you know, kind of obscure things, because it's kind of fun to do it that way. So if you guys have any suggestions on those, or want to hear a particular story or anything like that in the TikTok form, let us know. Reach out to Joe, call the number, and let us know, because we'll definitely jump on that and do it. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that, or if you're in like a certain town or whatever, and you're like, yeah, I want to know the haunted history of my town, or if there's any paranormal thing that happened, we'll do the research. We'll put it out there for you guys. So definitely interact with us, man. You know, we're big guys, but we're teddy bears. I promise.
Yeah, we are. I purr all the time.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard it.
I do. Oh my god.
Yeah, we're gonna go off on a tangent again. So let's just cut it off from now. So all right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen. Wow.